Welcome, Curious Minds, to another deep dive. Today, we're plunging into a really fascinating and honestly intensely debated corner of religious thought.
That's right.
We've got this unique text to unpack, an excerpt from Confronting the Zohar, An Apology and a Challenge by Chen Shaloff. The Zohar, for anyone maybe not familiar, it's the foundational text of Kabbalah.
Yeah, Jewish mysticism. It's complex stuff.
Definitely.
And, you know, this text we're looking at, it isn't just some dry academic discussion. It's raw, it's personal, highly theological, a real confrontation.
So our mission today really is to meticulously explore the arguments in here, the accusations.
And the personal journey, which is quite profound. It's all laid out in the text.
So what does this all mean for you listening?
Well, we'll be navigating a world of, you know, deeply held beliefs, really sharp disagreements.
And some surprising insights, I think, into how different interpretations can shape entire spiritual paths. Exactly. And we'll present the information just as it appears in the source text. We want you to be able to form your own understanding of this complex material. Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
So, our deep dive kicks off with something pretty dramatic. The author, Chen Shaloff, he received a threatening video. What was going on there?
Well, the person who sent it gave it this title: Video of a Dead Man Walking on Two Tours, Threatening That I Will Be Annihilated. Pretty stark.
Wow.
But then, interestingly, the title also had this kind of disclaimer. It said, let it be clear once and for all, there is no physical threat here. There is a message from heaven.
A message from heaven. But the actual content, that wasn't exactly ethereal, was it?
Not at all, no. The video opened right up with direct verbal abuse, saying, Shaloff, you piece of shoot.
Mm. Okay, so much for the heavenly message.
Precisely. And then this individual delivered a warning. Basically, if Shaloff didn't stop trying to prove the Zohar is, quote, pro-Christianity and idolatry book.
Which is Shaloff's core argument.
Right. If he didn't stop, he'd face further actions. And again, these actions were framed as this message from heaven, implying, you know, divine retribution.
And what's really striking, I think, is Shaloff's response. It was anything but timid.
Oh, not at all.
He declared that even under extreme physical threat, and he gets specific, mentioning an M16 or an AK-47,
yeah,
he would still proclaim, impure is the accursed Zohar. And he didn't stop there. He called its adherents accursed Kabbalists and accursed dark sorcerers.
And he threw it right back at the person in the video, calling him a walking dead man, you silent dog.
I mean, that really sets a powerful, uncompromising tone right from the start, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It just immediately establishes the high stakes. This is a theological battle, and Shaloff is absolutely dug in.
Okay, so let's get into the specifics of the threats in Shaloff's counterarguments. The person in the video didn't just make vague threats.
No, very specific demands. He warned Shaloff, do not utter another word against Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, often known as Rashbi.
Rashbi, the revered sage, right, from the Mishnaic period, a Tana.
Exactly. A major figure traditionally credited with the Zohar, though Shaloff contests that.
Mm-hmm.
The person in the video uses all these honorifics for Rashbi. Holy, pious, unique, bright.
And the threats got pretty graphic, didn't they?
Yeah, he told Shaloff, your mouth will turn to your neck in a circle, if he continued.
Oof.
And there was also this this veiled threat aimed at Shaloff's brother. He used a kind of biblical allusion, referring to the company of the company from the village of Shechem ben Shemor.
That sounds quite specific and loaded. What's the significance there?
Well, Shechem in the Bible is associated with treachery and violence, so it's a very ominous reference, implying danger for the brother if Shaloff persists.
Okay.
And the individual really emphasized this point. It's forbidden to speak ill of Torah scholars, especially righteous ones like Rashbi. He wraps up with these warnings about, quote, missiles and people dying.
Missiles, like literal missiles.
It's unclear if it's literal or metaphorical, but it's certainly ominous language. And he demanded Shaloff make a public apology video affirming Rashbi's holiness. It really shows how seriously they view Shaloff's claims as sacrilege.
So Shaloff's response to all this, it wasn't just defiance, was it? It seems like he used it to really lay out his core argument.
Exactly. It was strategic. He challenged the guy, asking, you know, where did I ever speak against Rashbi? He states clearly, I consider Rashbi to be a pure Tana.
Ah, so he's drawing a really crucial distinction there.
He is. He clarifies, look, my argument isn't with Rashbi. My argument is that the Zohar was falsely attributed to him. That's the core issue for Shaloff.
Okay.
And he actually turns it around. He says that the person threatening him and his associates by linking the Zohar's content, which Shaloff sees as idolatry and heresy, to Rashbi.
They are the ones defaming Rashbi.
Precisely. So in his view, he's defending Rashbi's reputation, not attacking it.
That's quite a turnaround. And what about the threat to his brother?
He flips that too. He basically says, I should be the one warning my brother. He says if his brother clings to the Zohar or doesn't work to eradicate it, that would be a great and terrible desecration of God's name.
Wow. He calls it blasphemy and cursing towards heaven, and again, a defamation of the pure Tana Rashbi.
Right. He's doubling down. And he even mentions, kind of as an aside, that his brother had publicly defamed him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And Shaloff sees this as just validating his own path of truth, basically saying his opponents have no real evidence, so they resort to personal attacks.
So he concludes that whole section by saying the threats and warnings actually apply to the person who sent the video and his group.
Yes, he calls them accursed, silent dogs walking in darkness. He completely turns the initial threat back on the sender.
Okay, so this intense back and forth leads us right into Shaloff's big picture condemnation of the Zohar itself. He doesn't mince words.
No, he absolutely doesn't. He states unequivocally that the Zohar is the most corrupting book since the creation of the world.
That's an incredibly strong statement about a text many hold sacred. What's his reasoning?
Well, he accuses the book directly of having, quote, corrupted, destroyed, shattered, broken, blasphemed, and annihilated the foundations of the Jewish people.
So it's not just wrong. In his view, it's actively destructive.
Exactly. And he provides a list, sort of a bullet list, of specific theological problems he sees in the Zohar.
Okay, what are they?
He claims it calls God short-tempered. He says it states that God mates like, has a consort, and that it divides God into parts.
Which goes against the core Jewish concept of God's absolute unity.
Absolutely. He also claims, it says, the Shekinah, the divine presence, is God's consort. And this is a big one, that God fears a being called Sitra Achra.
Sitra Achra, that's often translated as like the other side or forces of evil.
Right. The idea that God would fear anything is, well, deeply problematic from a traditional monotheistic standpoint. And finally, he claims the Zohar says there are other gods named Samael.
So multiple gods, God having parts, God mating, God fearing, these are fundamental challenges to Jewish theology.
Huge challenges. And from Shaloff's perspective, it's simple. Anyone who believes the Zohar is true or holy, given these points, is basically acknowledging idolatry.
And therefore?
Therefore, he considers them an apostate from the entire Torah. And he uses that phrase again, calling them like a dead dog.
He really doesn't hold back. And then he brings in a major authority to back this up, right? Maimonides?
Yes, Rambam. This is a significant move. He cites Maimonides' Hilchot Avodat Kochavim, The Laws of Idolatry. Specifically, Chapter 2, Halacha 4.
And what does that say?
It states that acknowledging idolatry, even just acknowledging its power, you don't even have to actively worship it, is considered apostasy from the entire Torah, the prophets, all the commandments.
Wow. Just acknowledging it as real is apostasy.
According to this interpretation of Maimonides, yes.
Yeah.
And conversely, denying idolatry is seen as affirming the whole Torah, because monotheism is the essence of all commandments.
So citing Maimonides here is really powerful. He's using one of the most respected legal authorities to basically say the Zohar falls foul of fundamental Jewish law.
Exactly. It's a strategic move to place his argument firmly within the bounds of traditional halakhic Judaism, as defined by Maimonides, who emphasized strict, uncompromising monotheism.
Does he cite any other passages?
He does. He also brings up Chapter 2, Halacha 6, from the same work by Maimonides.
Okay.
And this passage says that someone who acknowledges idolatry as true, even if they don't worship it, is considered a blasphemer against God.
A blasphemer?
Yes. And Maimonides states that both idol worshippers and blasphemers are subject to execution by stoning and hanging because, quote, both deny the fundamental principle.
So Shaloff is using Maimonides to frame belief in the Zohar not just as wrong, but as a capital offense under Jewish law, equivalent to blasphemy and idolatry itself.
That's precisely the implication. It underscores the absolute gravity he attaches to the Zohar's teachings, linking them to Maimonides' most severe condemnations.
Okay, so after all that intense condemnation and legal argument, the text takes a really sharp turn, right? There's a section titled, I Apologize to the People of Israel.
Yes, it's quite a pivot. And according to Shaloff, this apology came about because a Kohen, that's a member of the Jewish priestly lineage, told him he wouldn't achieve repentance without making it public.
Interesting. So what exactly is he apologizing for?
Well, he starts by apologizing generally, saying he was misled by strange cults since he was a child.
Strange cults. He's associating the Zohar's influence with cult-like behavior.
It seems so. He then lists specific practices and beliefs of these cults that he now completely disavows, things he presumably once participated in or observed.
Like what? What kind of practices?
Okay, so he mentions things like aiming to praise their rabbi to the point of, quote, turning him into a god.
Wow.
Also prostrating themselves before and worshiping a dead righteous person and even talking to them.
So like praying at gravesites but taking it much further?
Apparently so, in his view. He also mentions an impure rabbi controlling a wife instead of her husband, being lax about kosher meat laws. He specifically mentions eating goose liver and eating whatever comes to hand.
Okay, so issues of rabbinic authority and kashrut observance.
Right, and also causing terrible desecration of God's name by jumping in the streets, which maybe refers to certain ecstatic practices.
Possibly. And then the apology gets really personal, doesn't it? He lists his own past actions.
Yes, very personal. He regrets leading people to graves of the dead when he was young. He regrets leaving his country specifically to visit graves. He regrets ever studying the impure Zohar.
He regrets not learning what he now calls true Torah in his youth.
Right. He says he was like a Christian lighting candles for the dead, and adds that he later learned some of these figures weren't actually righteous.
That's a strong comparison. What else?
He mentions immersing in a mikveh, the ritual bath, multiple times a day, which he now looks back on as being like an accursed pagan.
Multiple times a day? That seems excessive even for standard practice.
It does suggest a certain obsessive or perhaps superstitious approach that he now rejects. And finally, he regrets preaching nonsense and vanity publicly since 2018, which he says he did unknowingly at the time.
So this is a really thorough public renunciation of a whole period of his life and belief system.
It absolutely is. And following this apology, he makes a pledge. He promises, though he explicitly says it's not a vow, to strive to eradicate idolatry from within his community.
But he acknowledges it won't be easy.
No, he says the fight is not simple and difficult. He mentions that many dead individuals, like the person who threatened him, stand in the breach and speak ill of him. He's clearly anticipating continued opposition.
And how does this excerpt end?
He finishes by extending an invitation to the person who threatened him, suggesting a substantive debate instead of empty threats.
A challenge for intellectual engagement rather than intimidation.
Exactly. And his very final words in the piece are this powerful condemnation, aimed presumably at the author of the Zohar, whether historical or symbolic. May the name of the Zohar's author be erased and his memory lost forever. Amen.
Wow.
And he signs off. Signs off as Chin Sholov, pure Sephardi, emphasizing his identity.
Okay. So wrapping this up, what we've really explored today is, well, it's a potent example of a profound theological dispute.
Absolutely. Marked by really strong convictions, stark accusations on both sides, and this deep personal reckoning from Sholov.
It just shows the incredible intensity that can flare up when foundational religious texts get interpreted in such profoundly different ways.
It's a powerful reminder, really, of how individuals engage with sacred texts and how those interpretations can lead to these intense, fundamental disagreements.
Right, even leading to personal threats on one side and this kind of wholesale rejection and public apology on the other.
And it kind of raises a broader question, doesn't it? In any community, you know, when you have these deeply held beliefs clashing, how do people decide which path is true, especially when both sides might claim divine backing or cite authoritative sources, like Sholov citing Maimonides?
That's a tough question. For you, the listener, we hope this deep dive has offered maybe a unique window into a highly charged debate, something to prompt thinking about the many ways belief systems are challenged, defended,
and how they profoundly shape individual lives and journeys.
Absolutely. A lot to think about there.